This woman kept leaning in and leaning in, looking at her neck. So Tarp said she started to look around to see if maybe she had forgot to dress properly. And finally, the lady said, many pastors have told them, we didn't even think the Muslims deserved to know about Jesus.
25,000 homes in this one block, most of them the size of a closet. One lady lived in this one that was so small she couldn't even lay down. She had to sit to sleep. It was just a little enclosure.
These little houses have doorways that open up below the pathway, and so the water flows into these little houses and soaks their floor and their kitchen, because their kitchen's on the ground, and the beds.
In this episode, Steve and Mark tell me about their visit to the slum where Dan and Tara minister. What they found reveals why your support of Dan and Tara means so much and goes so far. We also talk about why Steve will never get to visit Dan's ministry in remote villages, and why a young woman was staring at Tara's neck on the bus before all the COVID-19 lockdowns. This is part two in a three-part series, so if you missed the first part, be sure to go back and pick that up. Like part one, due to security concerns, we're changing the names of our partners in this recording, but for those of you who have been around, you'll pretty easily be able to tell who we're talking about. So let's get right into my conversation with Mark and Steve. Mark and Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Summer. It's great to be here today.
Thanks, Summer.
So, Steve, you brought something with you on this trip to encourage Tara, and that ended up being used by God in a way that was pretty unexpected. Could you tell us that story?
I knew that it was Tara's birthday. The Lord just laid on my heart to go on Amazon and to look for something that I could take, something small, lightweight, because you're flying, that might be impactful. And the Lord brought me to these necklaces, maybe the size of a silver dollar. They were cream colored, and it said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And she loved them. She was wearing this on the bus, and this crammed, jammed bus after we left. And there was this young millennial professional sitting next to her. And usually they don't talk. But she said this woman kept leaning in and leaning in, looking at. Then she started to look around to see if maybe she had forgot to dress properly or whatever. And finally, Tara touched her necklace, and the lady said, may I read what your necklace says? Because she'd been trying to read it. The woman leaned in and read it. I will never leave you nor forsake you. What does this mean? And Tara had a chance to share that this is from the Bible, and God says that he will never leave you nor forsake you. And I carry this because I know that no matter what happens, he will never leave me nor forsake me. And this woman got quiet and looked at her, and she says, I know this is so unacceptable, but would you give this to me? In this culture, if someone is bold enough to do that, you pretty much always accommodate that. But Tara said, I'm so sorry, but I can't. This was given to me by somebody very special, and I cannot give this to you. But maybe what I could do is get you a Bible. And this woman said, yes, yes, please. In a city of, I think there were 10 million people, to ride the bus the same time as this lady two times in the same month is almost impossible. But she was on the bus a week or two later and found out the connection, the small testimony, had encouraged this woman to find a neighbor who she knew was a believer, and this believer was able to get her a Bible. And so you just never know the little things that you do, how God's going to use it and the ripple effect that'll happen from it.
Wow, that's an amazing story. So I know that you guys visited the slum where Dan and Tara work. What were some of your first thoughts, Mark, when you experienced this place for the first time?
25,000 homes in this one block, most of them the size of a closet. One lady lived in this one that was so small she couldn't even lay down. She had to sit to sleep. It was just a little enclosure. Most of them would shanty things with tin roofs and no plumbing or electricity or anything. So it's amazing to see people live like that. Each day they got kind of more used to us walking through the area. They were so welcoming and friendly to us. They just wanted to touch your hand or shake your hand or say hello or whatever. And again, I think that's a reflection of our partners, that they love them and respect them so much that they welcomed us because we were friends and we were with them and we were working with the children too. So It was great.
It's hard to describe summer. Imagine somebody long time ago putting up a tin shack similar in size to some of the tin sheds that we put in our backyards to store our lawnmowers. Maybe a tad bigger than that, but literally made out of tin sheets and wood, dirt floors. And then somebody else needing a place to live and not having enough money comes in and builds another one, and then another and another. Well, then you run out of space, and so they start building on to your tin shed, and it saves them at least a couple tin sheets, but there's no insulation. You hear absolutely everything. You can't even probably whisper and not be heard. The only time you can whisper and not be heard is when there's enough road noise and construction noise and whatever else going on that it drowns out. But at night, when it's quiet and everybody is laying down, or maybe the husband comes home drunk and angry, maybe he's not happy with the food, maybe he's not happy with his wife, maybe he's physically abusing her, everybody hears it. And so kids and women and people are traumatized by what they hear throughout the night and the evening. The walkways are sometimes close enough I can reach out and touch each little house or hut on either side of the walkways. They'll have those torrential monsoon rains come down and there's no drainage. So it uses these pathways, and many of these little houses have doorways that open up below the pathway. And so the water flows into these little houses and soaks their floor and their kitchen, because their kitchen's on the ground, and the beds and the mattresses, if they have them. When I say beds, I mean mattresses, and the blankets and the clothes and whatever's on the ground, the shoes. It's a continual life of difficulty and trauma and heartache and poverty and all of those things. And when we come, the kids are smiling. They follow us around. They want to knuckle bump us. I've had them come and slide their hand into mine and just want to walk holding hands of this visitor, this person from a different culture who has a different skin color. And it's amazing. The women are a little standoffish, but they want to observe and see what's going on. And as Mark said, I believe our ability to walk through there and to encourage and deliver a blanket or go with Tara and pray for people is purely because Dan and Tara have loved on these people so much for so many years and been so beneficial to their children. This little school, when it's time to sign up for the next year, there's a line as long as a snake of moms with little kids in tow begging to get into this school. They know that if their kids get in the school, they'll get some food. They'll get some discipline. They'll learn how to hold a crayon. They've never held a crayon in their life. And because they don't know how to write their ABCs or their 1-2-3s, they would never get into a public school. And so this little DPAM school is so valuable. These parents, mostly the mothers, so want their kids to have a shot at life. They beg and plead for this little school to let their children please, please come in and be educated.
And I just want to point out that some ITMI supporters stepped up and paid for some of those kids to attend that school and gave a few of them that opportunity to experience something different than the harsh and difficult life that they're surrounded by.
You know, Summer, that's great to mention, because Dan and Tara a lot of times take their own personal support, and they don't get a lot, but they take it and they sacrifice themselves so that they can help one more child go, or that they can pay for one more doctor visit for a child that might not get to go to school if they didn't get some medical treatment because the parents don't have enough. And it's just amazing. And so, yes, everybody that's helped Dan and Tara have helped these children and have helped these women and have helped these families and have helped this Muslim area hear about and observe Jesus on a daily basis.
You guys also got to just kind of spend some downtime with Dan and Tara, time away from their ministry sites, in their home, with them as people. What was that like?
Yeah, they were such wonderful hosts. She cooked for us and brought us tea every day and little treats and stuff. Wonderful, wonderful meals at her home. One of the things that I remember most was one evening we got to eat dinner with both Dan and Tyra and their two sons, and we got to spend quite a bit of time sharing things in our lives and praying together. It was special. Culturally, we're different, and yet we're the same, believers in Christ. And that was very meaningful for me, just spending time praying with them.
Yeah, they're incredibly gracious. The Lord over the years have allowed them to save and to borrow and to build this little square concrete house in kind of an undeveloped area. And for them, it's a palace. It really has two small bedrooms, one small bathroom, a small kitchen, and a small little sitting area. But it's a palace to them, and they're so generous to allow us to come. They wished it was bigger, that they could let us stay there. I think Tyra really enjoys hospitality. I mean, really does. And she would want us to stay and become family, but their home is just so very small. They live in an area that has both Muslims and Hindus, but they've shown love and grace. There's a tailor down the street that they've built a relationship with. There are people on either side that they've built relationships with. And Tara has told them for years now that they want to build another story on top of their house. And in India, they build a good enough foundation when they build these houses that allow them to go up five stories in hopes of having enough money to put in some little apartments or something so that they could have a little income. Dan and Tara want to do something similar, but there's one major difference. They want to build a second story so that they can have a prayer room, a place of peace. You've heard a little bit about what it's like to live in the slum and the angst and the noise and the chaos. The enemy always brings chaos. He always destabilizes us with noise and conflict and chaos to kill, steal, and destroy. So this place of peace is even inviting to the Hindus and to the Muslims. And Dan and Tara will be there to welcome them in and to share with them the peace that they have and the truth that they have and the joy that they have. It will also have a little bedroom and an office. And the reason the office is necessary is because Dan's got a ministry that's on top of this ministry in the slum area with the little school. Dan and another strong, grounded pastor, an intense passion to meet the needs of rural pastors. There are tens of thousands of small villages. People come into the big city to get a job, and some of them will get saved. They will find Christ and go back, and they will share the gospel, and people will find hope and salvation. And now they look around and say, we need to have a church, and they just pick the person that's been the believer the longest, and the person is completely unqualified. And because there's this huge tension between the Hindus and the Muslims, the Hindus that get saved don't want anything to do with the Muslims, and so they ignore the Muslims. Well, Dan and this other pastor have six-month seminars in these little rural villages. They gather pastors together, many times in a home that's so small that you can only put a few people in, and they teach them how to minister, how to reach out to Muslims. It's been highly effective. Many pastors have told them, we didn't even think the Muslims deserved to know about Jesus. We were afraid, we didn't want to talk to them, and now we are openly going to them and trying to find the person of peace, because there are inside that culture those that are looking for the truth. And you find those, you share with them, and these pastors from that community can do an infinitely better job than I could ever do, and even Dan and this pastor could do. And so they spend many, many nights each month on the road traveling to staying in and doing these seminars. They do a whole day seminar. In fact, I believe it may be a two-day seminar. And then they give them homework, and then they come back the next month to the same place. But because they have lots of places to go to, they just repeat this over and over and over. This is a hugely beneficial ministry, although it's very challenging. The cost of fuel, the cost of a driver to drive, because neither Dan nor this pastor know how to drive, and so they have to hire a driver. What our donors help ITMI empower them, Dan uses that to go and to teach these pastors. And I know for a fact, I will never know the people that got saved. I will never know the people that got discipled. I will never know the Muslims that got saved or the Hindus that got saved, because Dan says these villages are so separated from society that if they see a person of my skin color come, it immediately changes the dynamics in a not so good way. And so it completely taints the whole reason for ministering there. So I will never go to these villages. I'll never be allowed to go, because the ministry there is more important than me getting a picture or me getting a video or any of those sorts of things.
It's a really good example of a ministry that only an Indian could do for his own people. And it's great that we have somebody over there doing that.
It's also been great hearing from both of you today. I want to thank you both so much for being with us and for all that you both shared.
Thank you, Summer.
Thank you.
As always, thanks for being with us today.
In the third episode of this series with Mark and Steve, Mark and Steve reflect on attending a special dedication ceremony for the completion of an incredible project that really is the beginning of a whole new ministry for our partners, a restroom and bathing facility. This is something that ITMI supporters helped our partners build for a village of people who are from such a low caste that they're considered too dirty to touch by society.
So if you haven't subscribed, make sure you do that so you don't miss out. The ministries and outreaches our partners are able to do, like the ones we talked about today, are possible because our supporters stand with them financially and prayerfully, and they're the ones that make it possible for our partners to do what they do. Supporters and friends, you are so important to us and to our partners. If you're not yet a supporter, now's a great time to get involved and make an impact. If you're interested in finding out more about that, you can do that at intouchmission.org. We'll see you next time.